Hey guys, so just a quick PSA before we jump into this episode. So about 30 minutes into recording, Kayla's Logic crashed on her computer and she lost all of the audio that we had recorded so far with her microphone. Thankfully, we always record a backup audio on our phones when we record, but that means that the first 30 minutes of this audio is going to be coming from her phone, at least her audio is. So it might be a little lower quality than the audio that will then come 30 minutes after that, which will then be from the microphone. Again, it shouldn't be too bad, but it is definitely going to be a noticeably worse in quality. So just want to let you guys know that before we go into our review of Spider-Man No Way Home. Hello and welcome to Secondhand Film Critics, your favorite source for mildly pretentious, semi-uneducated, and highly unqualified opinions on movies. I am Noah, and I am here with
Kayla.
And today we are here to review potentially the biggest movie of 2020. That's right, folks. We got early screeners to Sing 2, so we will be giving you all of our thoughts on Sing 2, the sequel, live now.
Oh my gosh.
Can you imagine, actually? That would be a wild episode. I actually saw that there was a theater by me that was playing like early screenings to Sing 2 like 2 weeks ago. So like a month almost before they released the movie.
You missed out.
Some lucky fans really were the Sing super fans. The Singers?
Mm-hmm. They were there.
I guess that would be their fan name. You know, sure. Just the Singers. No, today we're doing our sixth and final Marvel episode of the year.
Wow.
Which is Hawkeye mid-season review. No, I'm just joking. Okay. Now it's Spider-Man. It's Spider-Man No Way Home. Again, probably the biggest movie of the year, I would say.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah, but before we get into this review, which will be both non-spoiler and spoiler, we have to get into our answers to last week's question of the week, which was, what is your favorite holiday movie that has released in the last 10 years?
We've got a lot of answers here. For the first time, I think this is the most answers we've ever received for one question. This was an easy one, so.
You know, the people love the easy questions, so we'll try to keep them easier from now on. Because we like with the interaction, you know? I like getting questions.
Yeah.
And answers, I mean. We got a lot of Klaus, which, you know, I think we said already, you know, in our episode. So that was a pretty obvious one.
Yeah, that just proves, like I said, that instant classic, that is one of the ones that I feel will carry on for many, many more years.
We got, Zach Smith Michaels with Arthur Christmas, as well as Hunter, our friend Hunter, gave it, a shout out as a close second to Klaus. Which, again, we shouted out Arthur Christmas. What are some of the ones that people said that we didn't mention, though?
Dan said The Green Knight, baby.
I mean, it's kind of Christmassy.
That's one that I would not have thought of. But I was glad to see because I feel like that's a fun pick. It's kind of like subverts the Christmas genre. It's one of those movies that's like, is it Christmas? Is it really Christmas or is it just winter? I think it could fall under Christmas, so we'll give it to Dan.
Yeah, I mean, it was a pick I wasn't expecting, and a newer pick too, probably the newest one on the list. So that was a good one. We got Peter with Iron Man 3. So sure. I think that is also a Christmas movie, kind of, maybe. I mean, it's interesting now. I mean, this isn't really spoiling anything, but Spider-Man No Way Home takes place around the holiday season. It's not really Christmas anything themed. And then we have Hawkeye now, which is obviously very Christmas heavy. But, you know, Iron Man 3 was doing it a long time ago, 11 years ago. They were the first MCU Christmas movie.
Our friends over from After Credits both got some answers for us. Carly said Fat Man, which is one that we haven't seen, but I guess is a dark thriller about
dark
Santa
take
Claus.
On Santa. Yeah.
Bryce said The Night Before, which is a 2015 one. That's one that I eventually want to watch, but it doesn't stream anywhere, so.
That's another one I feel like you see in like the early, the newer Christmas lists that are like new classics. You're right though, it's never streaming because with the holiday movies and Halloween movies, both of those, you only want to watch them around the holidays, and that's when they take them off streaming, because like who's gonna watch the night before in April? Yeah, but I definitely also want to see it, and from what I know about Bryce too, that seems like right up his alley. So some good answers here that maybe gave you guys some thoughts on some movies you want to throw on before the holiday season is out. Maybe you want another Green Knight rewatch, which they did like reissue that actually. So I guess maybe they are saying it's a Christmas movie because it was in theaters for a little bit last week. So, but let's get into our review here. So this is going to be our non-spoiler section, which is going to be pretty hard because I feel like pretty much everything in this movie can be a spoiler if you take it in a certain way. So I think our ground rules, if you agree, should be everything that's in the trailer. Just trailer is fair game. And like general conversations about performances like of characters that we know are in the movie, and like technical aspects and like overarching concepts, but no plot things.
Sure.
Just because I feel like, you know, people are very sensitive to plot things and spoilers, even if we like give like, oh yeah, act one was great. We'll steer clear of that, but I would say, like, if you want to go in completely blind, then, you know, maybe just skip the episode, because there are some people that just don't want to know anything, and that's fine. But we will do our very best to keep it spoiler-free. I have a little history section written here. So do you want to read? Well, we can do the synopsis maybe after, because I think the history might be good first. But this is, like, taking us through the history of the movie leading up to its release.
So, this movie was unofficially announced by Tom Holland, of course, in 2017.
In 2005, he MCU, guys.
When he said the third film they had planned for Spider-Man would take place during Peter's senior year. And then in August of 2019, a month after the release of Far From Home, talks began to develop the next two Spider-Man movies. However, we all remember this, Sony and Marvel failed to agree on terms for a deal. Sony announced that Spider-Man would move forward separate from the MCU. Obviously, this was massive. It was all over. Everybody was complaining. Fans were freaking out. We were like, Spider-Man was just helmed to lead the Avengers, basically, and now what's gonna happen with the third movie, and like, are we just gonna have to recast again? But our boy Tom, he made a good old phone call to Bob Iger and Sony Pictures, and you know, they reopened the negotiations. He worked his little baby face, his cute little smile, maybe cried a little bit.
FaceTime. He had to FaceTime. It only worked on FaceTime.
Yeah, and then in September of 2019, it was announced that Spider-Man would return in a new MCU Spider-Man movie. So obviously that was like very good news, even though there was a lot of like emotional turmoil from a lot of fans thinking that they had lost.
It was
lost.
A really emotional time that summer. You know?
It was. So then it said that Spider-Man would be allowed to cross universes between the MCU and Sony's Spider-Man universe. So that kind of opened up the door to some other thoughts. So it was expected to begin filming in mid-2020, but due to the pandemic, it was moved back. Was actually originally planned to take place after Doctor Strange 2, which is pretty crazy.
That
thinking
is wild.
Now,
yeah.
But the movie was pushed even farther back, so obviously they had to rework the plot to be able to have, because you know, they have to make every single thing in their universe connect.
That's so stressful.
Because they think that they're cool by doing that. So
Yeah, they got like a whole clipboard on the
wall.
Yeah,
like the detective boards. They probably have a whole room in the Marvel Studios that's just like has red string from each different thing that's been connected in each different movie. So obviously, you know, with everything else in the shows, it all leads up to this movie. So instead of Doctor Strange, although it's very clear that Doctor Strange, technically, I would say that this movie still like straddles the two phases. Like this movie is, which makes sense since they had to move it. They obviously had to change a lot of that and make it fit in better than it would have.
Well, if you think about it, I mean, because Black Widow is a character that is already dead, you know, so they had to go backwards in time for that. So this is like the first Marvel movie that takes place in the new phase that is with like an old character, because we had Shang-Chi and Eternals, but those are obviously completely separate at the moment. So
yeah, the first movie, if you're not counting Wanda and Loki. Yeah, right. So they began filming in October 2020, wrapped in March 2021. Obviously, through all of this, there was all kinds of stuff flying around. We had rumors of Toby and Andrew being featured in it. We had rumors of a multiverse. People were like, maybe they're going to bring back Doc Ock. And then we had the trailer and it was like, oh, wait a second.
It's so weird. I don't even remember when that was like a question. I feel like people just started talking about it like it was going to happen. Like, oh, yeah, it's going to have Doc Ock in this one.
Yeah, it just was such a weird, like, over the summer, especially, like, people were, you know, maybe leaking set photos, but it was like, everyone was adamantly denying it, and was like, you could believe this is a set photo, but also, like, people are really good at making stuff like this. So who's to say what's real and what's not real? Obviously, Tom Holland tried to avoid all publicity as much as possible, and then all the press tour, they put him with Zendaya so that Zendaya could answer any leading questions, because our boy just can't do it. He can't handle the pressure.
I would be very bad at that. So to move into my favorite segment, the numbers, I feel like everyone is like super surprised, like, oh my gosh, that's breaking all these records, but we should have like known it was gonna do that. Because ticket sales surpassed the Black Widow sales in just 2 hours. And then by the end of the day, it was the best first day advance ticket sales since Endgame. So it passed Infinity War, Last Jedi, Far From Home, Rise of Skywalker, and Rogue One. Which is why, like, I tried to get tickets as soon as they went live at midnight or whatever. And all the ticket sites crashed. They were down, and so I just went to bed because I wasn't staying up till 2 a.m.
Yeah, I had, like, forgotten about it, and I was already in bed, and then I woke up in the middle of the night, and I was like, oh my god, Spider-Man tickets. And so I got on
rent-free.
I got on my phone at, like, 3 a.m., and on Twitter, obviously, I could see everyone being like, I can't get my tickets, everything was sold out, and I was like, oh no, not the tickets, no. And then I like logged into my app, and then I had this moment where I remembered that I live in the boonies. I was like, oh yeah, nothing is sold out here. So easy peasy, in my theater, not even everything was sold out. So it's just kind of funny because like that night just felt so chaotic because everyone and their children and their mother and their brother and their grandfather were buying Spider-Man No Way Home tickets.
Yeah, grandpa likes Spider-Man too. God, man, come on. Spider-Man is for everyone. 9 to 99.
Yeah. But once you hit 100,
nope.
It's not for you anymore.
So I kind of said it before, but this is breaking a lot of records. As usual with these, we are recording on Sunday. So I'm sure like the Saturday specific numbers are out, but it's basically the same, the projection. So Friday it got 121.5 million, so that's number two for Friday releases under Endgame, which was like 30 million more than that, but it was Endgame. Saturday it's projected that it got 72 to 74 million, which puts it at number three for a Saturday release under Endgame and Infinity War. Then the weekend projection at the moment is, this is domestic all, by the way, $253 million, which would be Sony's best box office of all time, a new record for December, and the number three of, like, the number three for the weekend box office under, again, Endgame and Infinity War. This would obviously also break the current pandemic box office record, which, do you see the document right now?
I do.
Okay, whatever. It's fine. It's 90.1 million. Wow. Do you know what movie that was, actually?
Black Widow?
Close. It was Venom, Let There Be Carnage, actually.
Oh, yeah. I vaguely remember us talking about that.
And just to see globally, even, the weekend projection right now is like about half a billion, which would be number two under Endgame and number three. Why do I keep saying number two? Number three under Endgame and Infinity War. So it is breaking all the records, basically, or like definitely the pandemic records, and breaking, I think, a lot of people thought it would make. I mean, we thought it would do well, but maybe not this well.
Yeah. And you think too, like, if we didn't have a pandemic, I think there are a lot more people who would have seen it this weekend that are holding off until the weekend is over and gonna go this week sometime. So I definitely think those numbers are a little stunted from what could have been if it had been released during a normal time.
I'll definitely be interested to see the box office in the next week. Like, if it still stays at a really nice number, like you said, because some people might be waiting. But yeah, it's pretty wild. Like, and everyone's watching it. Everyone's got something to say. It really feels like it did with Endgame and Infinity War, you know, when it was really all anyone was talking about. So do you want to jump in then to our non-spoiler review, which we can just get into maybe expectations going in?
I didn't know what to expect. Obviously this movie for us has been a bit of a disappointment in regards to Marvel movies. Like, movies have been all right, or, you know, on the lower end, but haven't been like amazing, or haven't.
Are you saying for this year?
For this year, yeah.
Yeah,
like,
right.
You know, Black Widow was good and we liked it, but it wasn't like going to other Marvel movies. And we didn't really like Shang-Chi, but, you know, other people did. And then Eternals was, like, very low mid-movie. So it's, like, it was hard to expect something good out of this based on those. And obviously with all the trailer was fine, but at least in the past couple weeks, the clips that had been coming out, yeah, were very not good representations
of the
film.
Well, some
of
the stills, too, that had come out.
So it just was, like, really hard to get kind of... I mean, obviously, it's like, are we covering things up? Are we only using, like, these random things because we're trying not to spoil the movie? I don't know. It just was, like, really hard to get a grasp on what this movie was going to be, I guess. So going in, I really didn't have any specific expectations. It kind of was like, it could be good, it could be not good, it could be funny, or maybe it's going to be stupid. I don't know. I'm just here for Tom Holland. Like, but I will say, going on my way to the theater was probably the first time in a while that I've been excited to, like, be going and seeing a movie. Like, I actually felt, like, energy about going and seeing a movie. And then when I got there, it was also the first time, probably since Endgame, that I've felt, like, movie buzz, like, in a theater. Because I saw Shang-Chi in a pretty packed IMAX theater, and it didn't feel like this at all. Like, it just felt very... oh, we're seeing something cool, but there was no, like, buzz of excitement about it. Whereas I feel like this, there just was a general, like, you could just kind of feel the energy in the room, I guess.
Yeah, I can get that. It's interesting because you went opening night. And I went on a Saturday, so that's like two, especially with like a movie like this, that's like gonna be two completely different viewing experiences, even with just 2 days. And I, again, went to, like, I know, so you went to the subtitled screening.
Which I did.
At the, at the screening itself had less people, but there were a lot of people like in other screenings. So you had the buzz.
Yeah, there were two other screenings that were sold out at the same time.
Yeah, so for me, I went to the theater by me that is smaller, that I know not as many people go to. And I also went at like 5:30, which is like right before the bigger screenings. So it was honestly like a regular, like when I go to the movies, you know, there was, I mean, more people than would have been in there than when I saw like the Green Knight or something at the theater. There was probably like 15 people in the theater. And so it was actually interesting because at least the theater experience, it wasn't like bad. I mean, the people in front of me were actually kind of annoying, but there wasn't like anything good or bad in the air. It just felt like a regular night at the movies, which was interesting for a movie like this. Expectation wise, you know, I'm on record as being a big Spider. We're both on record as being big Spider-Man fans. And obviously I love the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies, Spider-Man 2. So going into like seeing the trailers and stuff was pretty cool because you see all the characters in there. But I really didn't know what to expect. Obviously, before anyone said anything, like I'd seen it, we had those issues with the trailers I had as well with stills and like not really understanding what is the quality of this movie going to be. Is it just going to be like a cash grab because there's like all these like characters in it? And then even with reviews, though, like spoiler, I guess you really liked it.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's also some people I followed that gave it some middling reviews. No one that I give, like everyone that gave it really bad reviews, I actually don't trust. So like, I don't even really care about those, but it was not a very big consensus that I was seeing, at least because like I muted a lot of stuff as well on Twitter. So the little things I saw are the ratings on Letterboxd that friends were giving, just the scores, didn't really give me much to go on either. So I was pretty like going in blind as well, even though I saw it on a Saturday. I just really didn't know what to expect. I knew like obviously like with any Marvel movie, I think, or at least definitely like a Spider-Man movie, I know that it's going to be fun. So I knew at least like it would be enjoyable, but I wasn't sure the quality of everything going in, like if it would pass that bar from being enjoyable to being like an actually good movie, if that makes sense.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that makes sense.
And like you said, with some Marvel movies this year have disappointed us. A lot of Marvel stuff, like Falcon Winter Soldier, Shang-Chi Eternals. Like, there's been a lot of Marvel stuff that for this year that has just felt like, eh.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think Loki is the only thing, like, apart from this, yes, that I really actually liked. Because there were aspects of the other stuff that I did like, obviously. But Loki was the only one that I was like, this is really good.
Yeah, so let's jump into our review.
Do you want me to read the synopsis?
Yeah, let's read the synopsis I got here.
Fresh off his trip to Europe and fight with Mysterio, Peter Parker is ready to get back to his life in New York with his friends and girlfriend MJ. Unfortunately, the universe has other plans, and Peter's life is thrown for a loop when his identity is revealed to the world. Frustrated with how this is affecting not only him, but his best friends, Peter visits Doctor Strange to see if he has a spell that would make everyone forget he was Spider-Man. Strange agrees to cast the spell, but when it gets out of hand, a new evil is unleashed onto New York City, one that threatens to destroy everything Peter holds dear.
Very dramatic plot. You know, like, so the one thing about these, the first two, is that they felt pretty low stakes in terms, like, in comparison to other Marvel movies. But this one, like, from the beginning feels pretty high stakes. So I think that's immediately, like, a difference, like, just the setup.
Yeah, I agree. Which I think comes from, you know, Peter was very little, and now he's gone through all the Avengers stuff, Infinity War and Endgame and, you know, the blip and all that. So it's kind of like at this point, they have to raise the stakes because you can't really give him another kiddie movie. Like, he's grown up enough at this point that, like, he has to have something bigger to deal with.
Yeah. I mean, also with, like, Endgame and stuff and, like, him now being basically the biggest superhero they have, the most draw, I think, like, they have to make his movie big because he's like the biggest draw they have right now. Okay, so do you want to just get into some of your non-spoiler overall thoughts you had on this film?
I really liked it. I thought it was great. I feel like that's a general non-spoiler thought. I didn't feel the runtime at all. Like, a lot of these movies just feel so long to me. And that's even something, like, I loved Endgame, but Endgame also felt extremely long. I know that was longer, but, like, movies like that where there's just, like, a lot happening, a lot of action in these movies, it can start, like, weighing for me. But I felt like this one, at least for me personally, I didn't feel that at all. Like, it felt like it was moving enough and there was enough going on that it just kept me interested the whole time. Like, I wasn't, you know, thinking, oh, like, are we an hour in at this point? Are we an hour and a half? Like, what are we at now? Are we at act three? Like,
how far is the climax going to be?
Yeah, like, I never felt that at any point. Like, I just found myself enjoying the movie, which I was pretty excited about because that was one thing I kind of was a little more worried about because it's like we said, we're only seeing 15, 20 second clips. And it's like, how is this movie gonna fill this time and make it actually feel, because it feels like a long runtime when you look at it, you're like, man, 2.5 hours, what are they gonna do with 2.5 hours? Like, I have no idea.
Doc Ock gonna chase Peter around for 2.5 hours?
Yeah, like it just doesn't seem, but you know, obviously there's a lot of stuff that can happen in a movie, but yeah, so that was one of my main takeaways, was like, I just enjoyed everything. Like, it wasn't like I was sitting there being like, man, this scene could end like right now.
Yeah, that's a good point. Before I give my general thoughts with the runtime, like, I didn't feel the runtime, but I also did, like, it was one of those things where I was aware of how long it was and like where we were in the story, but I wasn't like I wasn't doing it in a way that I was like, how much longer do we have left? Yeah, I definitely liked the movie. I have some issues with it, but it definitely was like a very enjoyable Spider-Man movie. And there is an aspect of it I really like that I'm not going to say because it is, I think, it's kind of a spoiler. But there was like one thing that it did that I thought was a great move for it to make. I think that's the best way to say it. And it's not ever going to be like in my top five Spider-Mans, or well, maybe not, because there's not really that many Spider-Man movies, so not in my top three, I'll say. But I thought it was a very enjoyable movie that had a lot of different things that I liked, but also some things that I didn't, which is usually how movies go. But just like getting into some of the more specifics then, what did you think about was it performances of the leads? So I would say that's like Tom Holland, Zendaya, and then what is his friend's name?
Ned?
Yeah, but like, what's the actor's name?
Jacob Batalon.
Yeah, yeah. That's not a spoiler, because we know they're all in there, and we could talk about some of the ones too that we saw in the trailer.
Yeah, I thought they were pretty good in this one. I think that Tom has obviously grown this character a lot through his time playing it, and has really gone through a very like emotional character arc, especially with like losing Tony. And I think that he did a really good job, and I thought Zendaya was pretty decent. I know we've talked about that, like, we feel like each performance she gives is very similar to a previous movie.
Yes, this is true.
I did like her in this though. I thought she did a better job than I was expecting her to do. I think her character just isn't super interesting in general. Like,
yeah, I mean, they definitely give her the most to do in this movie, you know. I mean, because in the first two, well, the first one, like, she's really barely it, she's in Peter's friend group, but it's not like they're really friends. And then the second one, it's like the will they, won't they. And so this is the first one where they're actually like together,
you know? Yeah, which I definitely think gave her more than she has in any of the other movies so far. So I think with what she was given, she did a good job. I mean, like, she's basically just playing a teenage girl.
Right. Yeah.
Like, it's there's not much else to her role because she is a supporting role. So it's not like she's getting as much of a arc as a main role would get, but I felt like she was in it enough that she put off a good performance. And I think Jacob too, is that comic relief, obviously. Not that the rest of the movie isn't funny or Tom isn't funny and stuff, but his character serves as that comic best friend.
Yeah,
and
right.
He plays that well. I think he played it well in both of the other movies. I think I liked him best in the first movie, and then in Far From Home was, I don't know, a little weird because he had that other stuff going on.
I thought that was pretty funny.
It's funny, but like,
but he's not really with Tom as much.
Yeah,
you know?
Like, it's not really about them. I think in this one, he did a good job. I thought that he was funny. He delivered some good lines. I think he served the emotional beats well, which he hasn't had as much chance to exhibit in the other ones as much. I think in this one, he... Because, like you said, with Zendaya, too, he's given more of a role in this one. Because this is really about Tom and his buddies and how his identity being revealed affects all of them. And I think that he had a little more to work with, which I think helped and showed that he can also give a performance that is not just comic relief, which I think is good for him.
All right, so... That was a little about the performances. I don't know, how much can we talk about, and maybe just talk about it generally and then move into spoilers, because I feel like most people that are listening to this have probably already seen the movie. So everyone's probably just wanting us to get to spoilers. So just generally, my main issues with it lied in some of the pacing of the movie and the and a lot of the story elements, like the specific story elements. So maybe not the overarching story, if that makes sense, but some of the specific story choices or the way that the story was being framed,
yeah,
I guess.
Sure.
So maybe as like, if I step back and look at the story as a whole and the arc of the story, I like the general layout, but there were... As I was watching the movie, I felt like there were times I was like, this feels just like off, either pacing wise or like almost like this feels like the end of one movie and then the beginning of another movie, which is something that some of the, like, it's really hard to do in some of these bigger movies when they're trying to do really big overarching plots,
mm-hmm.
like Endgame and stuff, because sometimes it feels like each act is almost its own movie and like they have to do so much more to like build up to the second act that it's like this. The end of this first act feels basically like a climax in and of itself, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So maybe that was my main thing that's not spoiler related is just like, I guess pacing, you could say. It always just sounds like such a basic complaint, like when you don't know what you're talking about. But in general, I think that was one of my main issues with it, again, without spoiling anything. So, but I would recommend it, like, obviously, like if you like Spider-Man, If you like Marvel, if you like a good time, as long as you can stay safe, like it's a good time at the movies overall.
Yeah.
And I think like everyone is going to like be able to get something out of it that they like, if that makes sense, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely very broad. I think that's one thing that's always been good about Spider-Man is like he can hit, I feel like, a broader audience than some superheroes can. Like, Iron Man doesn't feel like as broad of a superhero for general audiences as like Spider-Man does.
Yeah, and because again, Spider-Man just feels a lot more human, I think. And I think that's like the main thing a lot of superhero movies lack is they get caught up in like the powers and the mythology of the character, rather than just like figuring out what is going to make people want to care about this character. And I think that's already like baked into this DNA, like I guess DNA, like spider DNA of Spider-Man. Like it's already in the character, like the reasons why you want to care about him. Like he's just trying to do the right thing, just like a young kid. He can't ever seem to like get things right in his life, you know? It's just like the classic things that make you want to root for a character. And so I think that because that's already in Spider-Man, it's what makes Spider-Man movies always at least somewhat enjoyable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely agree.
All right. So let's move into our spoilers, which is like so many places to start. Again, if you haven't seen the movie, please don't listen. So first spoiler, on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the most, how sure were you that Toby and Andrew were going to be in this movie?
I was like a 10. By the time we got to this movie, I was pretty sure.
I think what really sold me, like, at first, you know, I, like I said before, over the summer when, like, there were just leaks, it was like, like, this could be anything. But when that full trailer dropped and they put in that shot of all three characters jumping, that was what sold me.
Well, and you see, like, the lizard man, like, get hit, but nothing's hitting him,
yeah,
right?
I was like, yeah, that classic. That was it. That was the thing that sold me on it. And then also when they released the video of Tom and Jacob and Zendaya watching the trailer together, and Tom, like, almost said, "Where's Toby?" and, like,
I forgot
cut
about
off.
That.
I mean, Andrew was going pretty hard on him not being in this. And I was like, you know what? His was a little bit like, maybe they only got Toby, but I was like, that just wouldn't make sense. And then when that trailer, it was all that trailer with
the second one.
Yeah. I was like, there's no way they're not in this. Like, and yeah. I feel like even if someone had revealed that they were in it, I wouldn't have really taken that as a spoiler, because I was like, I feel like I already knew this. Like, I'm just expecting it at this point, especially when you know it's going to be about the multiverse. It's like,
point.
You know, you just gotta just believe it.
I was
it.
Pretty convinced too. Like, I mean, I don't even know if there's ever been an example of this with, like, really the biggest reveal in a movie, everyone knowing, like, 2 months in advance, pretty much, you know? And, like, you can see on Letterboxd, the last 2 months, people have been rewatching all the Spider-Man movies, basically, like, oh, wait, we gotta see how Andrew Garfield Spider-Man is so we can see how he's gonna react to this world. I just feel like it was really interesting seeing something that is such a big deal, like, everyone basically assumed was going to happen.
Well, and, like, we knew their villains were in it, so it'd be dumb if only the villains came through the multiverse and they didn't. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it just...
Yeah, I mean, I think the only thing is, like, obviously there would be no argument for them not to be in a perfect world.
Yeah.
I think the only thing in is, like, what did they actually... Obviously, I think Andrew would have wanted to come, but would Toby actually want to come? Like, is this something that they'd want
to
do,
like,
during
rehash,
a pandemic?
Yeah.
Get back in shape as well. Like, you got to be in shape to play Spider-Man. So it's like, is this something that they would just want to do? So that was, for me, I think the only thing that was like, I think by the time it came out, I was like, yeah, they're in it. But
yeah,
that
but
was,
like,
would
you
be
don't
the only
have
reason
any context
why they
for it, you know? Like, you have no idea what it's going to be like with them in it. Like, you just kind of know that they're going to show up. And you're just gonna, like, at least that, to that extent, like, I'm glad they weren't included in the trailers and stuff. Because even though, like, there wasn't as much an air of mystery surrounding them, I do think that, like, it was nice not having any information on what they would be like. Because I think that was a big sell of the movie, is, like, being able to have those moments with them happen as they're happening. Like, because obviously some of the other jokes that happened we got in the trailer, and they, you know, still got laughs in the theater, but it's like, you don't want to see the jokes with Toby and Peter, I mean, Toby and Andrew in the trailer. So,
well, and I think no one knew the role that they were going to play again in the movie, and, like, how much they were going to be in the movie. Would it just be a cameo? Would they show up right at the end, like, oh my gosh, other Spider-Men are here to help me, and then they just leave? I mean, now that we've seen the movie, we know they play a pretty integral role in the emotional arc of the story, if not obviously just, like, the main story plot.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if I would have expected them to play that big of a role in this movie going in. Like, I don't know if I would have thought it was just a cameo, because I think that would have been disappointing, actually. Like, more disappointing than them not being in the movie, if they just, like, waved and then left. But I don't know if I thought that they were going to be this big in, like, in the movie, like, play this big of a role.
Yeah.
Which was cool. I think, like, really, once they arrive in the movie, that is when, like, the rest of the movie, I think, really picks up for me.
Yeah.
Is they really add, like, that extra layer that it was missing, because one, like, there's really not a lot of characters in this movie. Like, there are, obviously, like, all the villains, but one of the things I loved about Homecoming and Far From Home, and really just all Spider-Man, is, like, it feels like it's such like a hustle bustle, alive city with all these different moving parts, and you've got this person and then he's going to class and then he got his teacher. So with this one, until they showed up, it felt like a really just like, oh, is this it? Like, it's just taking place in these 2 days and they're just locked in this basement and they're kind of just the three of them like chilling.
Mm-hmm.
But I think having them like join the team basically for the last third of the movie really added just the more characters it needed. Because I think they did need more dynamics that we didn't know. Because we know the dynamic between the three of them. And Doctor Strange gets taken out of the picture pretty quickly. So,
yeah.
Again, I think they were both like the most exciting thing in the movie, obviously. But also, I think the best choice, even more than like bringing back the villains.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
So, with this movie, what I think this movie is not that Tom Holland was never developed. Because obviously, he's been through a lot in the movies we've seen him in, but he's never really had like a Spider-Man movie, like the arc of Spider-Man where you have like the with power comes responsibility kind of thing. And I think that was like almost a sell of him at one point where they were like, there's no origin movie. It just jumps right into Spider-Man, which is fun. But I think that especially at this point, like realizing that you do need some of that to happen to make Spider-Man Spider-Man,
yeah.
If that makes sense. And it was interesting to see them do, like, not, like, a retroactive origin story, but, like, kind of a reset on the character, almost, where...
Yeah. Which I thought was a really smart decision, because,
mm-hmm.
I mean, like you said, but also for the sake of moving Tom's character forward, if he's going to continue to be in these movies, which it sounds like they're going to be making more Spider-Man movies with Tom... and obviously Avengers, future Avengers movies, he needed that sort of new moral dilemma. Like,
yeah.
Obviously losing Tony was a lot, and then being faced with this new identity crisis is a lot. But he hasn't really had to make the same sacrifices that, you know, Toby's or Andrew's Spider-Mans had made, you know, mm-hmm. right off the bat from losing Uncle Ben even. Like, having to make that moral choice of setting aside your own emotions and your own anger. And, you know, we've talked about, you know, Toby's movies and his moral dilemmas in both Spider-Man 2 and Spider-Man 3 of truly becoming Spider-Man. Like, he is making the conscious choice to say, I am going to be Spider-Man.
Right. Well, he gives it up, too, in those movies. So it's,
yeah,
like,
and
really earned.
Tom
yeah.
needed, his character needed that extra push. And I think because, like you said, we didn't get that original origin, I think this was a good way to really center him as someone who could lead the Avengers in the future.
Definitely.
And someone
yeah.
who isn't gonna be a kid anymore. I mean, he is, but, like, he sort of had to realize, I need to give up my life that I have now to become the person that I have to be, that I have this responsibility
yeah.
to be. And I think that was really good. I thought the ending, I mean, not to, like, jump forward to the ending, but the very end sequence I thought was
so good.
Was really,
yeah.
real, like, one of the best decisions they ever could have made, where he really just had to isolate himself and be like, am I going to choose to be Peter Parker or am I going to choose to be Spider-Man? And made
yeah.
the conscious decision to become Spider-Man.
Yeah, I think it's funny too, because like when this trailer dropped, I think you could see some of the fatigue from the MCU Spider-Man that people had. Like, especially the Iron Spider suit, which I definitely agreed with.
Yeah.
And even, like, you see it in, which I don't know if this was, like, consciously that they were trying to make this annoying, because then you, like, you want to see him go out on his own in the way you do at the end.
Uh-huh.
But when, like, he connects to the Doc Ock's arms by Bluetooth or whatever, I was like, what is going on? This is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. And, like... that just doesn't feel like Spider-Man to me. Not to be like, oh, this isn't like my Spider-Man. But it's not really what the character
yeah.
is about.
Which is, it is hard that they what like going back to the same thing though, that we were introduced to Spider-Man through Tony Stark. So our Spider-Man has always been Tony Stark's Spider-Man. It's the Stark Enterprises invented Spider-Man. So to be able to put him outside of that realm now, where he's completely cut off from all of those resources, is making us get back to, hopefully, the authentic roots of Spider-Man, where, you know, we're seeing, what, the sewing machine and, you know...
The suit is so good. The new suit
and, like,
is so good.
He's using the police scanner, and you're like... You know, wow, we, you know,
we're back.
Peter had to decide to be Spider-Man on his own, and he has to do it on his own until he's reunited, you know, with the new Avengers and whatnot.
Yeah, it's just such an interesting movie because, again, I love the last act, basically. I think it's basically the last act. I mean, I think that overall, I think the directing is pretty uninspired. I'll just say, like, I think with Spider-Man, I love the stylized stuff, and I don't think that that is really in these movies. Maybe it will be now more that we're getting to, like, grounded Spider-Man, and he's got less gadgets, and it's going to be more, like, just web-slinging. But it's, like, that stuff throughout the movie was not my favorite part. I think even in Homecoming and Far From Home, it just felt like they took Spider-Man and were, like, Marvelized it, I guess, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, it's hard... Because I don't know that that's even... I mean, it's obviously we don't know because we're not there while this movie's being made. It's hard because you wonder how much of that is really a directorial problem or how much of it is, like, you're directing a movie for Marvel. Like,
exactly.
Because
yeah.
Marvel...
I don't think he's a bad... I'm not going to say
no,
he's a bad
director.
No,
I know. But, like, I one thing that I think is really hard with... a lot of people on film Twitter is they're like, oh, this isn't as like you can't compare it to Sam Raimi's movies because it's missing the heart and it's missing this. And it's like, okay, I get that. I do think that Sam Raimi's movies have more character, but also those movies were not part of a gigantic, massive billion-dollar cinematic universe where every single movie is specifically tailored to like what Kevin Feige wants. Like, I don't know, like...
the Overlord Feige.
Yeah, like, it just... like, I definitely can say, like... I mean, obviously, you look at something like Thor Ragnarok, and you say you can see Taika's vision. I would say that you can see Taika's vision.
But I also think it is toned down from his other movies.
Yes.
You know? So there's, like, concessions that have to be made.
Yeah,
I
definitely agree with that. But I do think it's hard when, like, you have to also take into account that, like, this is the movie that's kicking off the new phase, technically, compared to Shang-Chi and the others, Eternals. Like, this is really the actual introducing the multiverse, introducing the new phase. Mm-hmm. So it's like, how much room do you have for creativity in something like that? And how much is like, you just have to follow the pattern? Whereas like, I feel like Far From Home and Homecoming, like they were a part of that, but they weren't following the pattern as closely as this had to, I guess.
Definitely. I think it'll be interesting to see Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. Like, that will be the test. Like, is film Twitter right? Is Sam Raimi going to really do his stuff, or is he going to have to also adhere to Marvel rules?
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
That'll be interesting.
And, I mean, I don't know any of the other stuff that this dude has made, John Watts.
I don't think he's really made much else.
Yeah.
Actually.
So it's hard because Sam Raimi is such a characterized director. Like, his movies are his movies. It's hard to look at these and be like, oh, well, like, these don't have character, but it's like, who even is John Watts as a director?
Well,
I don't
imagine
know.
Calling this, like, the Watts series,
yeah,
like, it
like,
just doesn't feel
right. I don't
feel
know
right.
What his style is, but again, like, I just think that's the construct of the MCU. I think that's a complaint you have to pull with the MCU, is, like, we're not calling any of these movies a director's movies. I mean, you're not even calling it Taika's Thor, like... And I would say one of the most characterized. Like, these movies are never about the directors, and I do think that is a problem. I'm not, like, trying to defend...
They're more about the actors, definitely.
Yeah, like, I really do think that that's a problem that the MCU has. I think that is characterized in this, for sure, is, like, you don't get that, but you also don't get that in any other Marvel movies, which I think, like you said, contributes to the fatigue and that kind of frustration that you mentioned at the beginning of what you were saying.
Well, I think because, like, unlike all the other movies that I don't like, no, there's not another Doctor Strange movie to pull on. There's not another, like, Iron Man movie to pull on. But there's so many iterations of Spider-Man now that you have other versions of Spider-Man to compare it to. So I think that's why it has come up more with this movie specifically.
Yeah, yeah, I definitely agree with that.
Other thing I would want to say too, again, with like, there's not a lot of people in this movie. One reason I really liked Homecoming and Far From Home, again, that they felt like kind of separate story-wise, but I really liked the high school nature of the movie, or like the camaraderie of the movie. And I felt like a lot of that was definitely missing here. Like, he goes to high school at one point, and then they're just like, don't talk about high school ever again.
Sure.
And they assume they're going to get into MIT, but, like, is MIT not going to hear that they didn't, like, attend their last semester of high school? Like, is that going to be an issue? Does MIT take? But, like, I do think that was one issue where it felt less like a Spider-Man movie, like, and more just like another Marvel movie with Spider-Man in it. And I think that there was good things, obviously, but if the tone felt just a lot different to me,
I think
than it, the other
they
ones.
Had trouble trying to place where this movie fits in, because it's like, okay, this movie is post Blip and post Far From Home, and like, is Peter gonna go to high school now that his identity has been revealed? Like, what's actually going on? And I think that's just a hard tone to kind of hit, like, where...
They probably shouldn't have even had him go back.
No, like, I would say, that scene could have probably been cut.
Yeah, because, like, you see the teachers, and it feels like they're trying to inject the energy of the last two into it, but it just doesn't fit, because that's not the movie that they're making, you know? I still love Flash, though. Highlight of all three movies. The Flashpoint book, so good. Not as good as the Flash Mob. That was the best joke that they made with him. But Flashpoint was a great choice.
He's so funny.
He is. And when he showed up, I literally, like, was so excited.
Yeah.
I don't know. Get him his own series. Adventures at MIT. It was Disney Plus series. Flash.
Like a vlog. They could have like a little like mini Flash vlogs, like
my
five
gosh.
Or 6 minute. They do one, you know, one season, my first semester at MIT, and they do like a weekly vlog.
This is
Flash.
The best idea.
I mean, and it doesn't even have to be high budget. Like, he could just film it on his phone and be like.
And they called them Flash Points.
Yeah. Wow.
Like, each
news
one,
flash.
Like, welcome back
it's
to Flash.
News flash. Flash.
Yes, the News Flash. Welcome back to the News Flash. Oh, man.
Wow, I love it.
That is so funny.
That's so funny. I think, like, okay, so for me, I gave this movie 5 stars, which obviously may be a surprise to a lot of people, because I am very much not a 5-star person. I rarely give out 5 stars, and I don't think I have ever in my life given 5 stars to a Marvel movie. But, like, for me, which we can talk about maybe some of the plot holes, because that was kind of my biggest issue, but I want to preface this to say, because obviously I didn't want to say this in the non-spoiler section, I finished the movie and I loved it. Like, it was one of the first times in a long time that I've finished a movie and been like, that was awesome. Probably since maybe Knives Out. Like, I don't know. I'm trying to remember a movie since then. It's like pandemic brain. Just like, I don't even remember the last time, but like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
I know. Yeah.
Definitely. At least in a theater and.
Yeah. Which is a different experience than at home.
Yeah, and so, you know, I texted one of my friends right away, and I was like, I loved this, this was awesome, and then, you know, I got home, and I was gonna put it on Letterboxd, and I gave it 4.5 stars, because I was like, well, I did have problems with, you know, such and such and such, which we can get into, but then I was like, that doesn't matter to me. Like, once I thought about it,
definitely.
I was like, these problems or these small issues I had with the plot or being like, that really doesn't work. I was like, I literally don't care. Like, I loved this enough and it made me feel euphoric enough that I was like, I could not care less about these specific plot points. And I think, like, if you've listened to the 5-star episode, you know that that's kind of how I rate movies, is like a lot of the movies that I have rated 5 stars are things that like another person would never in a million years rate 5 stars, like it's some random, you know, movie. And it's kind of just like that made me feel a lot of things. So I'm giving it 5 stars mm-hmm. because anything less, even if it had problems, feels dumb to me. So yeah, I just want to preface like that was my rating before we go into plot holes, because then you're not going to be like, wait, I thought you gave this 5 stars, but now you're like breaking down all these plot holes. What an idiot.
I think I think we said this in the 5-star, no movie is perfect. You're always going to be able to find something you don't like about a movie. And I think the higher you go in ratings, the less and less it matters about the technical things and the more it matters about just like how much you enjoyed it, you know? Because again, you're always going to be able to nitpick and give yourself a reason why you're not going to give it 5 stars. But once I think you're at that point, then you just give it 5 stars. Because obviously like you're looking for reasons to not like it. And if you,
I gave it 4.5 and then I was like, no, because I was like, we've talked about this with Last Jedi. And I will say the first Venom movie was also similar. I mean, not a 5-star movie, but it was also similar.
My other 5-star movie is
where
Venom.
You walk out of the theater and you're like, wow, that was awesome. And then you hear other people talking about it and you're like, maybe it wasn't awesome.
Maybe it wasn't awesome. And maybe I'm the worst, actually.
Before I looked at anybody else's opinions, I was like, I don't want that to happen to me. So I am giving this 5 stars right now because I loved this movie. And I don't want to hear anyone else's opinions to be like, oh, maybe like I'm crazy. Maybe it is a 4.5-star movie. I was like, no, 5 stars. Yeah.
And I've seen other people give it 5 stars too, definitely. Yeah. Where I think it is that kind of movie, because obviously like it's not like a masterpiece in the way that like you see it and you're like, oh, obviously this is going to be 5 stars for like so many people, you know? I think it's a 5 stars in the way like if it hits you a certain way emotionally, then it's going to lead you that direction, if that makes sense. And I think that there are other people that also were hit emotionally in the exact same way. So, plot hole wise, I mean, I'm so bad at finding plot holes.
Okay, can I tell you my... What are some of the plot holes? Here's my biggest problem with the plot. Well, I have a couple problems, but the main...
Why didn't Andrew and Peter kiss?
Yes.
I think that was the first plot hole.
Yeah, I think that definitely... Yeah. But I will say, I think that Andrew Garfield played him as queer as he possibly could. Like,
well, because he's given interviews that he pushed for a bi Spider-Man and the Amazing Spider-Man.
And that is part of the rumors of why a third one never happened as well.
But and like in a kind of movie like this, where obviously he's not the focus of the film, he can make decisions. Like, you can make decisions in a role like this, you know, and like just get away with it. And he made the decision.
Okay. I'm just going to say it now.
Are we just going to get into Andrew Garfield stuff first?
Yes, okay, sorry. Yeah, okay. We're all over the place.
Back to Andrew.
Andrew is my favorite Spider-Man. I do think that Tom Holland is one of the best castings for Spider-Man. I think that he is, like, perfectly cast as Spider-Man.
Especially for, like, the MCU, where he has to fit this specific
role. He firmly embodies the like very young boyish high school
like
Spider-Man.
Imagine if Andrew Garfield was in the MCU like as Spider-Man.
No way.
Like,
it wouldn't work. But Andrew Garfield is definitely my favorite Spider-Man. That was my Spider-Man as a kid, but also like I just think he's the best one.
So cool. Like, Andrew Garfield, please come on the podcast.
Oh my god,
would love to talk about anything. Literally, I don't care.
Yeah, he is the coolest.
He is. And he's so good in this movie. Yeah. Like, he steals the show in every scene.
Yeah, and I think Toby does too, but obviously, like...
Yeah.
Toby is definitely, in this one, he serves as more of a subdued, like, experienced guide. Andrew it doesn't serve that role at all. Toby's like the dad. He is definitely dad Spider-Man in this.
Dad vibes.
He's major dad vibes. You know that he's like wears cargo pants.
Well, he's got the great youth pastor line, Andrew. Yes. That is like one of the best lines in the MCU that has ever been written.
And that one, like, Luke and I both, because I saw this with my brother.
Right.
Luke and I both laughed at that line, and like it got a couple other chuckles.
It's one of the best lines.
Joke, like that was the only joke that like I kept laughing. Like I could not stop laughing after that line.
It feels so out of character for the MCU. So like it almost feels like. Not saying he wrote it, but he delivered it in a way where, like, it seemed like he came up with
it. Yeah, like, it was almost ad-libbed.
Yeah.
If I heard that that line was ad-libbed, I would believe it, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, so funny, and, like, that literally embodies exactly who Tobey's Spider-Man is, like, he, in this movie, is he feels like a dad. Like, he feels like the older guy that's like...
I mean, he's got the shave face, you know, a little bit. Hurt back.
Yeah, I thought that they each served a very good purpose, which I wrote a blog about that'll be on our website if you want me to...
Our first blog post?
What?
Question mark?
It's only been 3.5 months.
We actually both wrote a blog post the same day. Like, we haven't written one in 4 months. And then it just
you,
happened.
Yeah, you messaged me and you were like, I wrote this. And I was like, oh my God, wait, I wrote this.
Because, I mean, I'm off school now. I don't have other things to write. So
yeah, so anyway. I'll definitely, I like break that down a little bit more. And they're kind of distinct roles that you can check out on the website at the end of the week. But
yeah, Friday, I think.
Yeah, that's the plan. For. At least the weekend after Christmas or right before Christmas.
Saturday. Sunday.
It'll be around Christmas time. You're getting
a Christmas Day present?
Wow. No, yeah. Andrew is my favorite, and I think he sold every single scene he was in from the moment he walked into the room. When he's doing the whole, like, on the ceiling, and she's, like, get the cobwebs, and he's like, come on, guys. But you know he loves it. Like, he's obviously, like...
You can tell he's having so much
like,
fun,
he's like, this is
too.
The best time of my life. Like, these people know who Spider-Man is, and I'm not worried about them finding out who I am, because they don't know me. But he's just like, oh, it's so good.
Well, and, like, the Peter 3 line has already been talked about on Twitter, but that was so funny, because it's, like... Almost like a fourth wall breaking. Like, I know that's what I was saying from the beginning. Like, he just has so much character in such like a role that should just be like a glorified cameo, you know?
Which really like that is the best decision. Bringing both of them back into this movie, I think was the best decision anyone at Marvel could have made for this movie. Everything before that was fine. Like, I think it definitely was on a good track. I think the beginning half was interesting enough. I don't think it would have been as good by any means. Like, I think I would have come away from it, like, if they weren't in it being like, okay, that was fine. But, like, not thinking it was, like, the greatest thing.
No, yeah, like I said, it definitely took it to another level. For me, actually, like, I like them, definitely, like I said. I think the multiverse... aspect is maybe the worst part of this movie sometimes. It kind of shoots itself in the foot a little bit because it's trying to do, like, with all the villains, it just feels like too much. They definitely didn't need to bring back all these villains because half of them I feel like are just there. Sandman, I'm like, okay, Sandman. Or the Lizard especially. Like, he was, I don't know why they brought him.
Yeah, they could have just brought one of each.
And it just felt like with the healing thing, like it kind of just felt like a side quest, you know, like we got to make sure we heal them. And I know that at the end, then it was the main thing. And that felt more like a climax. But when they brought them to Happy's apartment,
is really when it dragged. That is the biggest plot hole to me. The fact that like that didn't need to, obviously needed to happen for them to escape, but that didn't need to happen. You know what I mean? Like they didn't need to be taken out of there. Like, he could have just said, okay, you guys run away with the box. Because, like, as long as Strange didn't have the box, they wouldn't have gone anywhere. So he could have just kept them all in their cages and done anything, transported Happy's, like, portable Stark lab to the basement. Like, there were just so many other things that I was like...
And it felt like just too much. It's like just another thing where, like, when they left the lab, that felt like one of those things I was saying where the movie ended... And then a new movie started. And I was like, it feels like another movie is starting right now.
There's also, I've seen a lot of complaints about being like, well, why did they jump right into doing the spell? That seems whatever. And why, like, is he doing this? And I also am like, okay, I have a problem with this. But also, like, Peter is a 17-year-old boy. I think every Spider-Man movie he does something dumb too. Yeah, it's not too far of a stretch to be like Peter would make this bad decision because he is literally a child.
He's a senior in high school, guys.
But obviously in context with the movie and being like, this is a billion-dollar movie, you do feel like it would be a little bit more rounded out. Like, even if Peter is making a dumb decision.
Are you talking about when, like, he's messing up the spell?
Both with him messing with the spell and with him, like, letting the villains out. Like, those kind of things. I feel like it worked when he's messing with the spell. Because obviously Peter would never think to call the admissions office. So even though Steven's like, you didn't even call them.
Are you kidding me? I would never call the admissions office. Let me tell you, Gen Z thing
I've ever heard. Like, no Gen Z person is thinking, I'm going to pick up the phone and call to solve this problem.
Well, like, it didn't even occur to me. No. Like, they got the letter. They're done.
Yeah, no, I didn't think that at all. And so I definitely, like, that one made sense to me. I've seen people complain about that, and I'm like, I don't know. That makes sense because he's a child, and he's also Gen Z, and, like, that just is not going to happen. Especially when he's, like, panicking. But, like, definitely for the second one, I'm like, okay, that one is a decision that I definitely have a few problems with, where he's just like, oh, we're going to save them, and so we're going to let them out of the cage. And
yeah, we're going to go to Happy's apartment now, like, for no apparent reason. Yeah.
Yeah, like, that just felt a little like they, like you said, a side quest. Like, it felt like they had to do something to move the story forward and create the conflict, but I definitely think that could have been done better.
Yeah, because, I mean, Aunt May's death can happen wherever the destruction is. They can escape from Doctor Strange's lab, you know?
Yeah, like, I just feel like there's a lot of more plausible ways that could have happened without it being like, oh, why did he do that? Like, it just didn't make as much sense as I think. Because I do think the moral dilemma is fine in a way where he's like, I think that we should save them or spare their life. But then it's also, there's just a lot of other questions.
Which, like, I don't really understand.
No, I don't personally either.
Like, how is the past Toby going to know that now the Green, like, Willem Dafoe is not the Green Goblin anymore? You know?
I don't know.
Like, if it's right. So that's just a couple questions.
Yeah, the multiverse in general, this made me very worried for the future of Marvel. I'm excited about the multiverse to see what's going to happen, but at the same time, I'm like, between Loki and this, I'm like, do you guys even know, like, what the multiverse is? Like, do you have a set of rules that you're working from here, or are we just throwing shit everywhere and just seeing what lands?
Well, yeah, that's what this kind of felt like, where it's like, oh yeah, the something broke in and then people got let out, but we have this box that can let them back in.
Yeah, and like, it just feels like they're kind of throwing these things out and being like, oh, that works. Maybe we can retcon it later if, like, we need something different. Like, that's kind of what it feels like. Yeah. But I feel like when you're introducing something this massive that's going to be the crux of the entirety of, I feel like you need to start explaining it now with very strict rules so that as we go forward as viewers, we know exactly, like, I mean, obviously there's some flexibility there, but, like, at this point we've had Wanda with a multiverse, we've had Loki with a multiverse,
well,
now we're having this multiverse.
Well, Loki's last episode was a full explanation, and I still do not understand.
Yeah, like, and it's like,
that's a big bad.
I feel like we need some bear, and this made me even more confused. Yeah. Like, all the stuff that was going on with Doctor Strange, I was like, I do not understand any of what is happening right now.
This movie is just about, like, we got this character, and it's about characters coming into our world. But once it gets to the point where, like, we're going to other universes.
Yeah, like, I didn't really understand, I understood why they came through in the first place, because the spell got messed up. So it's like, oh, I accidentally sucked them here. But then at the end, it's like, but now why do we need hundreds of them? to try to burst through the seams into this universe.
Yeah.
Like that, I was like, that is too grand scope. Like, I was fine when it was like, oh, a couple slipped through the cracks because, like, we were messing up the spell and it happened while we were messing up the spell.
Well, a lot of, like, the things that happen feel like they happen because they want the story to be like a big multiverse and they want to be able to have Andrew and Toby. It seems like the story happened because they wanted to get to this place and so they work backwards and like, this is how we're going to get to the point where we can have all these characters.
Yeah.
Not like the best thing for Spider-Man is that we need to open the multiverse. Because I do like the things that they did, but I also think that we could have gotten to the same place without this.
Which, to be fair, maybe that was one of the rewrites. Maybe that wasn't supposed to happen. Maybe the original story was that the multiverse was created in Doctor Strange, and then it was set up where these things had escaped somehow and were not contained in the original creation of the multiverse. And then because of that, they're in this universe, because that would make more sense to me, is like somehow these are in the universe and then get attracted to Peter when he's trying to figure out his identity. Like, they were already there. Like, that spell doesn't create the multiverse, but it attracted those people to Peter or something, because it doesn't make sense that this is what created this multiverse.
Well, and it feels a lot really anticlimactic that, like, the instigator for whatever is coming in phase four is like Peter just like making a mistake, like, oh wait, what about that, like, or Doctor Strange not like being specific about what the spell is. Like, it feels like a slip up.
Yeah, you're so
right. for such a big thing. Like,
and I don't think that they'll ever reveal to us whether or not that was the original plan. I think they're gonna pretend like this was their plan all along. But I would say, based on how well the previous phase was played out, I think COVID and just the release structure and their need to release all this content instead of waiting really like screwed up the plans for this next phase. Because I think if COVID had not have happened and they were able to release stuff in the order they were supposed to and have time to actually develop movie to movie in the way it's supposed to be, I think things would be a lot more clear. I mean, I don't know that they would be 100% clear, because I think the multiverse is just inherently confusing.
Well, and I think with the TV shows, there's like just a lot of things to remember.
Yeah. Right now. I think it just would have been a lot better. I think this movie, if that had been fleshed out, you know, and maybe ironed out more. I don't know if that was the original plan. I don't know. But
I mean, it is what it is. And I think that's like what makes Marvel movies so interesting to discuss is, you have the overarching story, and the question of every Marvel movie is basically, can they create a compelling narrative within the bigger structure that they have to adhere to? So, like, can they make a good move story in this big structure of the multiverse and, like, what has to happen for the next movie to happen?
Uh-huh.
I think what's interesting is, like, for you, it just was, I think, connected more, definitely. And for me, it was like, I liked it, but some of that other stuff just felt like two different movies, where like I'm watching the Spider-Man movie, but also all this other stuff is happening. And I'm like, this feels like it's not meshing in the way that I want it to.
Yeah, I think for me, the emotional value that I took from it outweighed any of the other issues that I had. I mean, I had the same issue that I have with every single other Marvel movie that I've talked about over and over and over, is I think that they shoot the fight sequences awful.
They
I
do.
Thought
it's
the
so,
fist fight between Willem and Tom at the end sucked ass. I thought that it was way too close in. You couldn't see it was happening. I was like, you're on freaking Captain America's giant ass shield. Like, give me a drone shot. Give me a wide shot. Like, why are we cutting in? And so, yeah, so that was something that was like frustrating to me in the theater. But like I said, like, I don't really care about the fight sequences as much as other people do. Like, obviously I want cool fight sequences, and that was one of the best parts about Shang-Chi. But I'm like, I like the emotional stuff more than I like the fight sequences.
Yeah, it's like, is it enough to take you out of it, you know?
Yeah,
because if you're connected enough with any movie, you can get away with a lot. because, like, I care about what happens no matter what is going on right now. I think a good example, like, I recently rewatched Spider-Man 3, and obviously there's a lot of issues with Spider-Man 3, but I care enough about what's going on in the story that a lot of the issues I don't really care about. And I think that's with all movies, again, like, all movies are going to have issues, but it just matters, like, do the issues matter enough to, like, take away from your enjoyment of whatever's going on sure. screen, like, in the story? And
yeah, I mean, for me, if I took all my emotional feelings out of it and just took the movie at its face value as a movie, I would say this is a 3.5-star movie, mm-hmm. Just production-wise, story-wise, the way it was structured. But when you add in the, like, emotional Andrew weight, Garfield. When you add in Andrew Garfield, I mean, that's an obvious
star bump, right?
No, yeah. But yeah, when you add in those characters and you add in, you know, Aunt May's death and kind of their camaraderie in helping him. No, we didn't. But pulling him out of that hole, not only Andrew and Toby, but showing Zendaya and Jacob also pulling him out of that hole and kind of being like, I don't know. It is all about that family. That sells it for me. You know, those scenes alone make that movie so much better, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, the other thing that we haven't touched on, besides Aunt May's death, which I think is a good, like, I mean, it's interesting because it's, like, kind of risky, but also not, because, like, she was never a character, I think. They really underused her.
Yeah.
And so it's, like, in this movie, they were trying to be like, oh, wait, you don't care about Aunt May? Like, well, I care about Peter, and if he's sad, then I'm sad.
Yeah.
But it's not like I care about her as much.
Yeah.
But it was, again, I think an interesting way of, like, doing the origin story. And, like, you have the, with great, well, once she said with great power comes great responsibility, you know she's going to die. Like, oh, man, those yeah. are the words. Those
well,
are the words that you
can't
like, say.
Well, because you're like, oh, she's probably going to die, but, like, maybe Happy will show up in time.
Yeah.
Like, you don't really know, but then it's like,
she says those words.
Oh, yeah, like, she
screwed.
Says it, and you're like, oh, no, no, not again. And I love their kind of, I mean, like, okay, I know it's cheesy. I know the scene is cheesy where Peter says it, and, sorry, Peter 1 says it, and then Peter 2 and Peter 3, like, finish the line, and it's cheesy, I know, but also, like, it is what brings them together, is they
well,
all
Well, it's the crux
had,
of Spider-Man, yeah.
Yeah, they all had this emotional turning point, and I think that that was great. Like, I don't care that
right.
it sounds like fan fiction. I like fan fiction.
It does sound like fan fiction.
I am a fan of fan fiction, so I'm fine with
you
it.
You are Chloe Zhao.
I am on AO3 every day.
What's interesting, yeah, it's like, that was actually what kind of brought me to the conclusion, like, oh, wait, they didn't really ever do this with Spider-Man. Like, the other Spider-Man are so much different than Tom Holland's, and, like, this is really what his character needed to actually become Spider-Man
yeah.
in, like, what we know him as, which, yeah. again, ending is very good. Personally, like, I mean, I was sad that, like, he has to say goodbye to his, well, mostly Ned, that was more sad than him saying goodbye to MJ, because, like, what, they've known each other, they were dating for, like, a week, like, all right, like,
yeah,
I love
like,
you,
it
like,
sucks,
do you, though?
But also, like, yeah, I definitely, Ned hit a lot harder for me.
Well, like, and then he puts the Emperor, the Lego on his dresser, which was, obviously, that is the emotional pull for me. Zendaya, like, I mean, I think it's supposed to be, like, you're just supposed to care about the relationship, because, like,
and I do think that final scene in the coffee shop was good.
You see the cut, and, like, it's supposed to be like, oh, he doesn't want them to get hurt, which is, like, that unsaid thing, which is really what makes Spider-Man Spider-Man, is, like, him making those hard decisions.
Yeah, and I think that was, like, because I know that's something we've talked about in the Sam Raimi episode we did, is, like, that is one of the biggest things about the Spider-Man, Tobey Spider-Man, that we have loved, is that dilemma that he really has to face
yeah.
is deciding, you know, where his moral responsibility is.
Yeah, I think, again, it's what makes Spider-Man Spider-Man. And Peter has, again, had to go through issues, but it's never been that exact dilemma of, like, choosing between a normal life and a life of helping people and using my powers for good.
Yeah.
And that's what we ended there. And I actually, like, makes me more excited for the future of Spider-Man than yes. maybe I was.
Yeah, I am a little bit confused about how it all finished out. Where, like, how does that work where people, like, forget that Peter was Spider-Man? Like,
is he actually going to be in the Avengers? Yeah, or is, like, he going to be by himself?
I have a lot of questions about that because, like, obviously Spider-Man was a part of the Avengers and that is still canon. We just don't know that he's Peter. So it's like, did Happy meet Spider-Man? He knows of Spider-Man, but he doesn't know Peter. And then it also has to reset the timeline of how Happy would have met May. Like, how was Happy still in a relationship with May when she died?
Yeah, there's a couple things, like,
I have a lot of questions. I mean, like, I haven't even fully thought about all of that. But in that scene, I was like, wait. Okay, wait.
I definitely thought that too. I was like, wait, does Happy know him? Because she knew him, but he obviously doesn't.
Yeah, but, like, Happy would have to know who Spider-Man is because the world knows who Spider-Man is, but not Peter. So I just, like, I have a lot of questions about that specifically. Like, how does Spider-Man's path change? Like, I don't know. It just is like, does it retcon everything in the past now?
What it felt like to me is, like, they were trying to even, like, just separate him from the MCU. Like, he's going to be completely separate now.
Well, they may have tried to save their asses of, like, what if something ever goes down again between Sony and Marvel is, like, what are they going to do? They have to be able to, I don't know, separate that. But I do think that there's a lot of confusing things about the way things kind of shook out, even though if I am excited about the future, I'm like, I don't really understand how this is gonna work, but, like, I'm not mad about it. Like,
I'm really hoping they don't, like, roll everything back as well, you know, because I think that would really undercut the emotional ending of this if they're just like, okay, but now he's gonna be an Avenger and he's gonna be using the suit again. And, like,
And I don't think that they, like, I definitely think he could be an Avenger. Obviously, I have questions now about him leading the Avengers. I don't think that's gonna happen.
Who's gonna lead the Avengers? Wanda?
Wanda, probably. Wong.
Yeah.
Wong is now.
Wong.
No,
Wong and Wanda.
I think they're spearheading Shang-Chi to lead the Avengers.
Hmm.
That's my theory.
I like Wanda better, actually.
I want Wanda in charge. No, probably Falcon. I mean, the new Captain America will lead the Avengers.
Wanda's better. Wanda's a better choice
time. I agree. I think Wanda's the most powerful Avenger. I think she's the greatest, but...
Well, what sucks, too, is, like, obviously, like, I like Spider-Man apart from the MCU more than I like him with the MCU, but Spider-Man's also the character I care the most about, and if he's not a part of the Avengers, and it's just, like, Falcon and, like, Shang-Chi, like... I don't, like, they're good characters, but
it is harder.
It's harder to, like, they're going to have to definitely, like, do something.
And now, you know, looking at, I guess, the future now, I mean, we've talked about the future of the MCU. What about, you know, I think Toby's done. I think it was pretty clear that Toby's was closed.
Yeah. Which was a good ending. I think a good ending for him.
I think it was a very good ending. I think he got what was due. I think we all got our moment where it was like, wow, Toby. And, you know, salute to the dude. And he was there and he sacrificed and he gave everything. And, you know, we love him. But I do think, I think that there is potential for Andrew to come back. I'm going to hold out
Don't
hope.
Give me hope.
I'm going to look. I've seen so much stuff online today. I've seen different things. I don't know that it's plausible because I do think they have their own plans and whatnot, but I think it's a possibility. Like, I'm not going to write it off completely.
I definitely agree.
Obviously,
though,
we have the Venom tease at the end where now Venom has been placed into the R universe that we know, which is obviously something that we've expected. For Venom to eventually make his way into our universe, but how, we didn't know. So now Venom has, or a form of Venom, not Tom Hardy's Venom, but a form of Venom has been introduced to our MCU, which is cool.
But then you have Tom Hardy's Venom going back to his universe, which I've seen then people say, what if that's Andrew Garfield's universe and he's going to seek out Spider-Man in his universe, and then that's how Andrew Garfield gets introduced, you know?
Yeah, so. And I think that's a very plausible theory, because it's like, why else would he be there? Like, where else would he have come from?
Why would they have brought Tom Hardy into this movie if they weren't going to try to do something with him more?
Well, and Andrew talked about it. Andrew talked, you know, like...
And he said he'd want to return.
And he said he wanted to return, so...
And everyone loves him in this movie. Everyone is finally realizing how great of a Spider-Man Andrew is.
And, I'm just going to say it. They had the line where Toby was like, I have fought an alien, and then Tom was like, I fought an alien in space, and Andrew was like, man, I want to fight an alien.
When Andrew was in that scene just like cringing when they were like complimenting him, I was like, man, this is so me.
Relatable.
Andrew Garfield is me.
He's the most relatable, at least to our generation. I feel like our generation, he's the most relatable.
Well, I think like, yeah, like the early, like young adulthood kind of thing, because Tom Holland, obviously, I mean, maybe now he will, but in the last three movies, he's been the more teenage surrogate.
Yeah.
And Tobey Maguire, even though he wasn't college, always felt like
older.
Older. So I think Andrew Garfield is really that perfect middle ground.
Which and I talk about in you my do talk piece about, that you can read.
You do talk about it. And even though he does have the closure with like the Gwen falling thing in this movie, I think there's a lot in his character that still can be furthered, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot. I mean, obviously, they had a whole movie they were going to make, they didn't. Like, there's a lot they can do with his character, so.
Yeah,
I have faith, and I want to see Andrew Garfield in as many things as possible. He's been killing it this year.
This is his year, for sure. Oscar?
Oscar for Tick, Tick, Boom. I think he could.
I think he could. I think he had,
I don't think he could win, but
no, I think he'll get the nomination. Maybe win the Golden Globe.
Yeah, maybe the Golden Globe. Did you see the interview he did where, like, he's a really big fan of Cobra Kai, and they got the that is the best video
that is so
I've ever
cute.
Seen. And he's
I
like
love him.
Crying. He's oh it's such
God.
A great video.
I love him. It like apart from like this, just bringing because you know, I not to keep going on and on, but apart from this bringing
yeah,
up
there's
like
so much to talk about, this.
Dredging up a lot of like childhood. Like memories of watching Amazing Spider-Man and him kind of being like a comfort character for me. I do think that too, like because of that, as a kid, I was like, you know, having Pinterest boards dedicated to Andrew Garfield, you know, pinning pictures of him, that I'm kind of like, oh yeah, like this is coming back now. Good. Like I'm glad that
I've already seen the fan cams. They're already being made.
Look, Succession is over and I need a new hyperfixation, so I'm just going to let this
be it. Yeah.
Be my new hyperfixation. Just bringing back my eighth and ninth and 10th grade hyperfixation will be Andrew Garfield.
That could be really a lot to unpack there, but
a lot, yes.
We'll let it slide, and basically I'll just finish by saying, you know, if you like the movie, then see it. Obviously, at this point, you probably have already seen it, so I don't know. I liked it. I think it's fun. I think I ranked it number 6 in my Spider-Man rankings, but again, like, I love Spider-Man, and so, like...
Yeah, so, I mean, it's, like...
It's, like, Spider-Man... It's 3.5... It's, like, it's a 4 or 3.5. Like, on all my ranking, it's, like, right there, where, like, I could either put it at 4 or 3.5. Maybe I will put it at a 4 if I see it again. And it's right under Spider-Man 3 out of 4, but again, like, I feel like they're both the same, but they're completely different movies, so it's really hard to, like, rank those.
Yeah, it was hard for me, too, because, so I put this at my top spot on my Spider-Man ranking, but obviously, like, you look at my top three are this one, Into the Spider-Verse, and then Amazing Spider-Man, and it's like, those are three entirely different Spider-Man universes. And like
and different styles,
and
different things
I
going on.
I love all three of those movies like so much that it's like I don't like it's almost hard to even put an actual numerical ranking because it's like can't I just make all three my top Spider-Man movie?
Yeah, like I know which Spider-Man movies I don't like, and it's really only like The Amazing Spider-Man 2 is like the only one that I don't really like. And so it's like after that it's just hard. Like Spider-Man 1 is so campy and, like, a different, it's a completely different movie than No Way Home. Like, they're not even, like, the same genre.
Yeah, it just is, it's hard. I mean, yeah, like you said, like, all of my Spider-Man movies are, like, a 4 to 4.5 to 5 star. So it's like, I don't, like, know what to say about it. Like, all the Sam Raimi movies are, like, 4 to 4.5 stars. So it's like, what else am I supposed to do?
It's I like,
don't
know. It's, it's at 8 on my ranking, but I still love it. 8 isn't bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So our question of the week, then, is what is your favorite Spider-Man movie? Mm. So maybe, you know, you're a fan of Amazing Spider-Man. Maybe you're a fan of Amazing Spider-Man 2. Maybe you're Raimi hardcore Spider-Man 2 person. Let's go, you know? What is it?
Yeah,
let us know. So you can answer that question on our Twitter. We'll put it on our Instagram story. You can email us at secondhandfilmcritics@gmail.com or DM our pod account. You can just search Secondhand Film Critics on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and let us know what your favorite Spider-Man movie is, and we will read it in our next episode, which is...
This was our last Marvel movie that we're... Marvel property we're talking about in 2021, and we're taking a quick week break, and then we're kicking off 2022 with another Marvel property.
Oh my god, it never ends.
And the cycle of content just keeps going. We're going to be talking about Hawkeye,
which I have not watched any of yet, so I'm going to have to crunch some Hawkeye into my schedule here.
Currently, it's like I have things to say about it, but I also have nothing to say about it. Like,
yeah, we'll see. And our good friend Peter, resident Marvel expert, will be back to talk about Hawkeye with us. Yeah, so this is our last episode of 2021. That is crazy.
What a year.
What a time to be alive.
We did a lot. We did a lot of episodes. Hopefully everyone enjoyed. We're going to be doing like a 2021 wrap up after the Hawkeye series, but we wanted to get Hawkeye
I think we have a little ways to go, right?
Well, not the awards, but aren't we doing like the 2021 wrap, like recap? Because like we don't always have everything ranked, you know, we just kind of talk about what the year in movies was like. It's not really about like, this is my definitive top 10. So, and looking forward to next year, which... Currently, I really, like, know nothing coming out next year besides, like, the big movies. So, I guess we'll have to do some research on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, anything to say until then?
No, I got nothing. I'm all talked out.
I know. There's a lot to say about this movie, so hopefully I should have fun editing this. Well,
yeah, good luck.
Thank you all for listening to this episode and this whole year. And until next time, I'm Noah.
And I'm Noah, too.
And we're
your secondhand
film critics.